Today on the 21st show, Illinois has a new law aimed at preventing libraries from banning certain books. This comes as conservative groups have targeted libraries over their selections.
We refuse to let a vitriolic strain of white nationalism coursing through our country determine whose histories are told. Not in Illinois.
It's a way to backdoor the sex ed bill that passed at General Assembly ago. And now the left is just saying, well, we're going to make it to where we're going to have these books in the schools. They're going to be there. We're going to tie it to funding. And we're going to put out a false narrative.
We'll talk about this with a librarian, a teacher, and an advocate for libraries. And we'll hear from a state representative who opposed the law. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about books, specifically books that some people consider controversial, and Illinois' new law aimed at preventing such books from being banned. We've talked before on our program about the rise in challenges to certain books. That's the term a lot of library professionals prefer, book challenges, not the more colloquial book bans, since often a challenge does not result in a ban. That said, I'll probably slip and use them interchangeably. And regardless, the American Library Association has documented what it calls an unprecedented uptick in challenges. Since we last spoke about this on the show in October, several predominantly Republican states have gone after books, especially books that talk about race, ethnicity, and people who are LGBTQ. In Mississippi, for example, a new law forbids public libraries and state agencies from providing minors with access to any digital resources that contain what the law calls sexually oriented materials. And that's forced some libraries to block off youth access to all their digital books and audiobooks. Illinois, however, is going in the other direction. Last month, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a law that's aimed at banning the practice of banning books.
Book bans are about censorship, marginalizing people, marginalizing ideas and facts. Regimes ban books, not democracies.
Librarians have become targets by a movement that disingenuously claims to pursue freedom, but instead promotes authoritarianism.
Those pushing book banning say they are doing it to protect people. Well, that's just not true. Book banning is most frequently used to silence the voices of the LGBTQ plus community, as well as people of color.
We heard there State Representative Ann Stava Murray, who co-sponsored the legislation. Before that, Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulias and Governor Pritzker. The law says in order to be eligible for state grants, Illinois libraries must adopt the American Library Association's Library Bill of Rights, or a similar statement, prohibiting the banning of books. It also says books should not be removed on account of, quote, partisan or doctrinal disapproval. With the passage of this legislation, we thought it'd be a good opportunity to check in with teachers, librarians, and others about what it could mean for them and what's been happening in our libraries. Several of our guests will also be participating in a panel discussion on these same topics this Wednesday, 6 p.m., at the North Branch of the Peoria Public Library. Joining us now is Ashley Stewart from the Caseyville Public Library. She's been director there for 6 years and is also an elected trustee for Collinsville Township. Ashley, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is John Kraska. He is the founder and executive director of Every Library, an organization that helps libraries with funding and building voter support. John, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good to be on the show today, Brian. Thank you.
And finally, we're joined by Fallon Kirby, a 7th grade English teacher at Rolling Acres Middle School in Peoria. She's seen the spike in book challenges affecting the trajectory of her classroom. Fallon, welcome to you as well.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And a little later in the program, we'll hear a conversation I recorded earlier this morning with Republican State Representative Adam Niemerg, who opposed the new law. And after that, we will return to our panelists. For now, you're welcome to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. What do you think about what Illinois is doing around libraries? Should the state deny funding if libraries allow books to be banned for partisan or doctrinal disapproval? And on that note, what does doctrinal disapproval even mean? Let's hear your hypotheses, observations, and questions at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Ashley, I'm going to begin with you. What has been your experience of the recent wave of protests and book challenges at the Caseyville Public Library?
Sure. So we have been fortunate in the sense of not having book challenges, which is kind of surprising. We were the first library in the Metro East area to host a drag queen story time. And so you would have thought that the book challenges would have come kind of naturally after that, but surprisingly it didn't. And we're grateful for that. For the program itself, we had anything from prayer vigils to physical protests outside the library that included hateful messages to my board, my staff, and myself. And being a small town, it was one of those where I couldn't really go to many places in the community without getting a comment or somebody's opinion. But my background is in social work. And so between that and the library, it's, you know, our purpose is to, I want to make sure my staff are welcomed, my staff that are members of the LGBTQ community. And also the taxpayers in my community that are part of that community. I'm here for literally everybody in the community. And so we persevered and it was a great success.
I'm curious about, this is something we've heard so much about in the news, and it's caused a lot of these protest flare-ups, is this idea of the drag queen story hour. Talk more about what, it seems like something we never heard about for years, and now we hear about it all the time, and maybe that's just sort of selection bias on my part of what I'm reading, but what is the concept behind that? Where did this idea come from?
Yeah, so the drag queen story time, I think people tend to focus on the kids being quote-unquote exposed to this. But the reality is there's many people in our community that not only identify with the queer community, but they're also extreme allies of that community. And that could be open and affirming churches, local organizations that support LGBTQ individuals and allies, family members of those that are in that community. And so a drag queen story time, yes, it's for the kids, of course, but it's also a way that parents, same-sex couples, you name it, they can all come together, and it's a networking opportunity, and it's a chance for them to get other resources and materials. So the books themselves talk about inclusion and acceptance, and just really beautiful books about treating everybody with respect, regardless of how we might look or what interests we might have. And so, yeah, that's just kind of a background for the drag queen story time.
All right, Fallon Kirby, I want to bring you into the conversation now. English teacher at Rolling Acres Middle School in Peoria. Tell us about the book Ghost Boys.
Ghost Boys was, well, I did the novel during my student teaching, which I did in a different school. It was not at Rolling Acres. It was at Central Junior High in East Peoria. The book is, it's a really beautiful story. It's similar to the Tamara Rice story about a 12-year-old boy who has a toy gun, is shot in the back by a police officer. And the story wraps up in a really beautiful way because the police officer's daughter and the ghost of the boy who was shot, she's the only one that can see him, and they become friends. And you see both perspectives of, you know, of this story. And I was told that I could not finish the book. I was told to stop on a Thursday. Our final test was on a Tuesday. I had gotten no parent complaints at this point in time. My principal just came in and said that there was an issue with the book, that he had gotten parent complaints, but nothing was brought to me or my cooperating teachers at the time of my student teaching. So I had to stop doing the book.
How did your students react?
Oh, they were very upset. See, the shining light, the bright spot of this is I had students advocating for what we were learning. They sent emails into the superintendent and my principal. They were, you know, visibly, you know, upset, and I had to have many conversations about why the book was stopped. But, you know, that puts me in a dangerous position as well, because I have my own thoughts but nothing was directly said to me. They just said I was teaching anti-police concepts in CRT and that I had to stop.
So what did you do?
Well, we had to stop doing the book. We were told to just move on. You know, I gave a talk to all my students in all my sections. I was very emotional. I was very shocked because in East Peoria, that's where my love of teaching middle school and it really encouraged that. I had been an aide there for 7 years. I thought I was trusted in my school community. And it was like someone snapped their fingers and there was all of this backlash, but nothing was saying. We only had 3 days of the book left. We only had a couple of chapters left. And so the kids were quite upset. Yeah.
All right. We're going to come back to that story a little later in our conversation.
Sure,
John Kraske, I want to bring you into the conversation now from Every Library. And I wanted to ask you to just sort of set a baseline for us by talking about the Niles Main Township Library. This is something your organization was involved with. When did you first hear about something afoot there?
So Niles Main Township's in suburban Chicago. The issues there started in the summer of 2021, where there was a group of trustees, locally elected library board members, who got on the board through a regular election and hadn't told the voters the full truth about what they were running to do when they got on the board. They started working on defunding the library almost from the beginning. And that defunding initiatives were targeted at cutting staff. They were targeted at cutting the collections. It was cutting hours. And there was a group of local activists and local citizens who got together, part of the larger conversations in Niles, Illinois, around human rights and human dignity. They took the library's cause as one of their own and set up the Save Niles Library Coalition. And Every Library, as the National Political Action Committee for Libraries, was very happy to stand alongside them and help over the course of 18, 20 months now to work against that takeover of the library by folks who have a very non-library perspective on what their board service should be.
What do you understand? What did people there understand about what motivated the people who came onto the board with that agenda, as you say, of cutting and reducing and clamping down?
Well, we run into fiscally conservative folks all the time who say that they're socially liberal. And I have a lot of conversations with people at, you know, cocktail parties and Thanksgiving dinners like that. But sometimes the fiscally conservative, socially liberal is actually a wolf in sheep's clothing. The library is a very welcoming place. The library there in Niles Main Township, the libraries around this great state of ours are here to serve people without fear or favor. There certainly were rumblings about changes in the Niles community. Sometimes folks who are long timers in a town don't like new people coming to the community. Some of that was playing out in this election, in that election for that library board. The idea that if we have a smaller library, we're somehow or another saving massive amounts of taxes. That's a spurious argument to begin with. There's always an agenda. When the library only accounts for maybe 3% of a local tax base, you have to take a look more closely at what's driving this. And in Niles Main Township, it was certainly a little more socially regressive, as it were.
All right. So the reason we convened this conversation today is because, well, one, there's this event in Peoria coming up, so it was convenient to have you all sort of having this these topics in mind. But also the governor recently signed this legislation aimed at banning book bans, to use the colloquial phrase. And Ashley Stewart of the Caseyville Public Library, the director there, how do you expect this law to affect your work with regard to challenges?
So in my opinion, I believe this legislation just reiterates Illinois law, what we've already been doing. It's already been part of Illinois law and the Library Bill of Rights. And so to me, this legislation just reaffirms what we've already been doing. And what I compare it to is if you look greater than the library space, it's, if we compare it to something else, it's like, it's one thing to have that feeling of fear depending on what conversations or content might be, like puberty or developing one's identity or, you know, any of those kind of topics. But demanding to remove something and making that inaccessible for anybody else based on one's own fear, to me, that's an irrational response and an unreasonable request. And I compare that to, if we operated that way with all entities, then we wouldn't have any roller coasters at theme parks, or we wouldn't have any lines at the zoo. So we can't allow this to happen in libraries. And this bill reaffirms our protections underneath the Constitution and Illinois state law.
Fallon Kirby, I know this legislation is about libraries and not necessarily the classroom, I guess, but I wonder if you think this might have made a difference in the experience you had with Ghost Boys, the book you were reading to your students when administrators told you, nope, you need to stop halfway through.
I'm hoping for the best. In my situation, Ghost Boys was in my school library. It was not banned from my library. It was actually it's a Caudill award-winning book. It's an AR book. So if it really doesn't allow me much protection, but I'm hoping to refer to it. You know, it gives me a little bit of protection, because I always tell my students, I may not be able to do this with you in our curriculum, right? I may not be able to walk you through this book, but you can always go and you can read it on your own. Like, if there's a book that someone is telling you that you should not read, odds are that you should probably read that book, and you should discover and make those decisions for yourself. These are middle school kids. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that gives our students at least a little bit more protection, so they can choose the books that they see fit.
Yeah, I had to Google that. AR is accelerated reader, not
yes,
augmented
it's an
reality.
Accelerated reader.
Yes.
I apologize.
All right. No, it's all right. We're going to continue this conversation. When we come back, we're going to hear the perspective of a state legislator who opposed this law, State Representative Adam Niemerg. I spoke with him earlier this morning. We're going to hear what he has to say about this. Then we will come back to our panelists to continue our conversation. You can join us, as always, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Stay with us. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and today we're talking about a new law. It doesn't actually go into effect until next year, but it was recently signed by Governor Pritzker, aimed at preventing the banning of books in public and school libraries. We're going to hear now from State Representative Adam Niemerg, a Republican from Dietrich, Illinois. His district is along the border with Indiana in the central part of the state, stretching from Champaign and Vermilion counties in the north all the way down to Lawrence County in the south. He was first elected to the General Assembly in 2020 and is a member of a group of conservative Republicans that call themselves the House Freedom Caucus. This lasts about 12 minutes. I spoke with him earlier this morning. Representative Niemerg, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on this morning.
What are your main objections to the law?
Well, I have many objections to this particular piece of legislation. When it passed through, there was nothing discussed about schools. It was just libraries in general. And you can't ban books in libraries. And it's the typical Democrat playbook when they talk about, hey, we're not allowing the right-wing Republicans to ban books, but it's simply a false narrative. So when I really dove into it and did a lot of research, because typically, you know, you can what the Democrats say on the floor versus what's actually happening with the bill are usually two different things. So I dove into the language of the legislation and found that this is applicable to schools. And that's something that we always need to be very cognizant about. It's not only in our public library system, but it's also within our schools, and it's tied to grant funding to certain schools. So if you decide that this particular book is not age appropriate, you do not want this to be in your library, you could potentially be banned from those grants for your particular library. So it's a way to backdoor SB 818, the sex ed bill that passed at General Assembly ago that I was completely opposed to. Many school districts opted out of SB 818, And now the left is just saying, well, we're going to make it to where we're going to have these books in the schools. They're going to be there. We're going to tie it to funding. And we're going to put out a false narrative on this particular piece of legislation.
You've said that the legislation effectively makes it impossible for local library boards, for example, to block pornographic material from their shelves. How do you distinguish between what is a pornographic book and, you know, maybe literature that has some explicit content in it?
Well, it's all depending on what's age appropriate. You know, we go back to SB 818, and there's a book called It's Perfectly Normal. And folks, if you look up this book, you see the graphic nature of this book. It's basically pornography, and it aligns with the National Sex Education Standards, which, as Illinois has adopted, it's still optional. There was a bill in lame duck to make it mandatory. And a lot of many moderate Dems in the House, we were able to stop that. It was going to come over from the Senate, but we were able to stop that mandate before it even got to the House by talking to moderate Democrats and saying, hey, this is absolutely ridiculous that this would be a mandate for schools. So when we look at what defines, you know, that line on what age appropriate, what's not age appropriate, it's books like It's Perfectly Normal. It's graphic content. It's talking about, you know, in a very sexual nature, defining certain sexual acts or certain photos and documentation that would be within those books that you just simply don't want a kindergartner, a first grader, second grader, third grader, fourth grader, or fifth grader to be looking at. But, you know, these books will be placed in libraries. These children will have access to this. So what I'm calling on all the librarians to do throughout the state and moreover in schools is to be very cognizant of what the Illinois State Board of Education wants you to place in your libraries. Work with your ROEs. There's many great ROEs out throughout Southern Illinois that stand against this as well. Just work together and make sure these children don't have access. And ultimately, if there's a book like Perfectly Normal that you want to ban, look at your federal funding, look at how much is coming in for these grants. And if you want to say no to those federal dollars coming in or these grants coming in as part of that mechanism of enforcement, then let's have that conversation.
Why not trust a librarian to say, you know what, this book is maybe not appropriate for a kindergartner or even a fourth or fifth grader, but a seventh or eighth grader, maybe they have some questions. This could answer some questions that they're experiencing.
Well, again, this comes down to age-appropriate books. It comes down to what should be placed in these libraries and who should have access to those particular books and libraries. I believe that there are many great librarians throughout, especially in Southern Illinois, you know, when it comes to our public education system. But in some of their areas, it's not that way. When we look at the legislation that passed last General Assembly on what the curriculum was going to be, and we don't draft the curriculum, we leave it to ISBE and nothing comes back. So we're just saying, here, have at it. These governor-appointed positions, there's a radical leftist that are steering the ship. We say, go ahead, write the curriculum, and it doesn't have to come back for our approval. But I looked at the Chicago public school systems and what they were teaching. And what was being taught before SB 818 came into law and an optional policy in our school districts, I was aghast by it. I thought, oh my gosh, this is being taught to you know, a fourth grader, fifth grader, a third grader about, quite frankly, you know, different sexual positions, oral sex, you know, anal sex, but things that would make an adult blush was being taught to these children and is being taught in certain school districts with SB 818. So it's about age-appropriate books. It's about these books not being able to be accessed by young children. And the way this law is written, the way it's drafted, this is another woke agenda to be pushed in our public school systems to get these children access to these books.
I mean, I know your statement when the law was signed talked about, I think it was something like giving pornography to kindergartners or something along those lines. I don't want to misquote it, but you know, I did look up the standards for kindergartners through second grade, the National Sex Ed Standards. It says list medically accurate names for body parts, including the genitals, defined gender, gender identity, and gender stereotype roles. What is it about that that you object to?
So when you look at the National Sex Education Standards and you look at that curriculum that was rolled out, it clearly lays out, just as you said, what the standards are and what's going to be taught. You know, it's essentially a kindergarten. Rather than teaching reading and writing, our proficiency rates are awful in the state of Illinois. They're so low. Children can't read or write. Nearly 2/3 of grades 3 through 6 fail at proficiency levels here in the state of Illinois. Yet, just as you discussed, they'd rather be social indoctrination through gender pronouns. And when it comes to kindergartners, they should be able to play. They should be able to, you know, have fun, learn about reading and writing. But we're talking about, hey, you don't know if you're a boy or a girl. And let's have that conversation for kindergartners. Then you're talking about second and third graders. There is a particular piece in that National Sex Education Standards on third graders talking about gender hormone treatment and gender blockers, yet children are failing to read and write. That's fundamentally what I'm objecting to. I'm objecting to the indoctrination in our schools, the social indoctrination, when these children should be, you know, being taught to be critical thinkers, being taught to read, to write, to learn, yet they're pushing this social leftist agenda.
Last year, the American Library Association came out with a survey, and one of the polled statements was, parents have, and this is like, which one more closely aligns with your values, right? On the one hand, parents have a right not to have their children exposed to objectionable books at the library and should be able to join with other parents in having those books removed. And then the other statement was, individual parents can set rules for their own children, but they don't have the right to decide for other parents what books are available to their children. I wonder which of those more closely aligns with your view.
You know, throughout COVID, I think that, you know, fortunately and unfortunately, what COVID did, we saw the masking in schools. We saw schools being closed. We saw everything that was happening. And folks started to attend school board meetings now more than ever, and they became active in what was going on. This was coupled with the, again, the Sex Bill 818, the National Sex Education Standard. And this was all happening at the same time. I'm a firm believer in parents' rights. You know, I said on the floor one day, I will not co-parent with the government. But I also understand that education is a valuable asset that we have for our youth. But we have to be cognizant of what's being taught to our children. Parents need to be able to see the curriculum. Parents need to be able to be active in the curriculum rather than just dropping the kids off and going to work for 8 hours and coming back and saying, how was your day? I want parents to be more involved. I want parents to know what's happening in schools. And ultimately, I think it's beneficial. I think it's beneficial for the parent. I think it's beneficial for the teacher to have a better knowledge of what that parent's looking for and what's happening in that student's home life. So everybody can work together and properly educate these children.
I think Democrats, to go back to that statement, and I'm not quite sure you answered which one more closely aligns, right? Is the greater good that parents should be able to object for their own kids, or, you know, the idea that parents can set rules for their kids but don't have a right to decide for others? And I think what Democrats are saying is, why should a library board or a school board say, you know, that all kids can't have access to something if a parent does want their kid to through a library?
Well, if a parent wants their child to have access to certain material, then the parent can have access to that certain material. The parent can get that material. The parent can go out, they can find that material, and they can access it and educate their kids as they see fit. But when it comes to our public education system, when it comes to what should be placed in our schools, you know, we look at certain situations, these books are not age appropriate. So it's ultimately, it goes back to where I'm at. It's about parental rights. It's about the parents being able to make that decision. So you know, the parent can go out, they can find that material, but I completely disagree with this piece of legislation. I disagree with SB 818, the National Sex Education Standards. And I really, really disagree with books like It's Perfectly Normal that'll be placed in the libraries to be accessed by children that should not be accessing that curriculum.
When the law was signed, you said it continues the war on families in Illinois, which is pretty strong language. What do you understand to be the ultimate objective of a war on families?
Well, you know, when you say a war on families on this particular piece of legislation, and you talk about everything that's being said in the public education system about how these are, you see, you know, all the powerful teachers unions. You see the head of Illinois the Federation of Teachers. Is it Randy Weingarten? I'm sorry, one of those mornings, but. And they say, they're not your kids, they're our kids. You know, who was it that ran against Glenn Youngkin out in Virginia said, you know, parents don't have rights and what's going on in the school. So, you know, when you see all of this happening, when you see the conversation shifting, when you see a little bit more transparency to the process as a result of COVID and parents coming in to school board meetings, I honestly think the ultimate objective of the left is the breakdown of the core family. It is the redefinition of who we are as a society. It's fundamentally changing America. And that's something that I am greatly opposed to. And I'll fight to preserve our rights here as a constitutional republic. So, you know, they say, oh, there's nothing to see here. This will never happen. And, you know, but they continue to run these pieces of legislation. And again, ultimately, this comes down to this is a trailer bill on SB 818. Kids are going to be in schools. They're tying this to funding, and they're going to be able to pull these books off the shelves and open them up. And there's going to be non-age appropriate material in.
State Representative Adam Niemerk, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
State Representative Adam Niemerk is a Republican from Dietrich in East Central Illinois. And we are back live, so you can join us once again at 800-222-9455. We're speaking with Ashley Stewart, director of the Caseyville Public Library, Fallon Kirby, a teacher at Rolling Acres Middle School in Peoria, and John Kraska, the founder and executive director of the advocacy organization Every Library. The topic of our program today is a new law in Illinois that ostensibly is aimed at banning book bans here. John Kraska, I wonder, what's your reaction to what you heard from Representative Niemerk there?
Well, there's a lot to unpack today, Brian, from Representative's remarks. The idea that this is a back-end way to enforce SB 818 is a interesting novel theory. His refrain about age-appropriate books disregards 818's need for developmentally appropriate books and really frames a conversation that is about appropriate versus inappropriate, which is always a fight between two individuals rather than a conversation about what's relevant to the population that's being served by these books. The idea that sex ed is not relevant to a first grader, a fifth grader, a 12th grader, a 21 and over person. I mean, the relevance of these books, he talked a couple times about the failure in this state to have kids reading and writing, the literacy shortfalls. What he's proposing here by eliminating access to real solid good information about sex, about gender, about identity, is he's eliminating a whole world of literacies there. I mean, if you don't have access to the vocabulary, Brian, I don't understand how he can be calling for better literacy and then removing vocabulary about sex or about identity or about gender from these very human, very important discussions. Common Sense Media, who I'm sure that the representative has paid a little bit of attention to over the years, Common Sense Media back in January put out a national survey. Every Library had nothing to do with it. They didn't ask us our opinion of it, but I found it to be fascinating. They asked teenagers. Thousands of teenagers around the country, where are you seeing pornography? And 0% of these kids came back and said the public or school library. 0%. They all came back and said their telephones, their handheld devices, their iPads. It's a tragedy. 20% of the kids came back and said, I find good information about health, about sex, about gender. 20% came back and said, I get it from library books. I get it from the library. Good information, Brian. And so many of those kids have trouble talking with their family, their pastors, their teachers, folks in their lives who are in leadership. I mean, my goodness, for the representative to allege that this kind of bill here that prevents or diminishes the number of times that people can file spurious challenges against good books continues the war on families, I'm a bit concerned from where I'm sitting right now.
All right, we need to take another break here, and I do want to also give Ashley Stewart and Fallon Kirby a chance to respond to what they heard there, and then just talk about where things go in Illinois libraries and classrooms and school libraries with this new law on the books. But we do have to take a break. You are welcome to join us live today at 800-222-9455. If you want to respond to something you heard from the state representative there, again, the number to call in live is 800-222-9455. I'll also take this opportunity to remind listeners, if you are in the Peoria area, John and Ashley will be continuing the conversation with others at 6 p.m. this Wednesday at an event at the North Branch of the Peoria Public Library, a panel discussion on these topics. Again, to join us now, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. More to come after a short break. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a new law in Illinois aimed at preventing the banning of books in public and school libraries. Our guests for this conversation are Fallon Kirby, a teacher at Rolling Acres Middle School in Peoria, John Kraska, the founder and executive director of the advocacy organization Every Library, and Ashley Stewart, director of the Caseyville Public Library. And Ashley, I also wanted to ask you about something we heard before the break there from State Representative Adam Niemerg, who's a Republican who opposes this new law in Illinois. He said if a parent wants their child to have access to certain information, they can go get that book or information for their child. Problem solved, right? What do you think of that?
I think that there's some concern about trusting what their child and children can and cannot check out. And if there is an issue with that, then that is something they can absolutely talk about with their kiddo. And yes, I agree in having it available. And again, I'm from a public library perspective, so I'm giving you my approach. But yes, it should be made available. If you just look at statistics for abuse that unfortunately happens for kids at all ages, these topics and content are extremely relevant. And I understand that that could be a difficult conversation, but it's still needed and it's necessary. And again, I like to give comparisons here. So if librarians are receiving hateful rhetoric for items that are on our shelf, it's like a child going into an ice cream parlor and they order, say they have food sensitivities and it's something that they order, and then it's like they're making the workers at the ice cream parlor responsible for the reaction that the kid will have or the family. It just doesn't make sense to me that we're getting mad at librarians and library staff for just doing their job. And again, if it's something that they don't trust their kids with getting, then that's a different discussion that they need to be having, but it's not our fault for just doing our job.
So I think the analogy you're saying is like if your child has a nut allergy and you go in and the kid gets nuts on their sundae and then you yell at the library or the ice cream parlor attendant for putting nuts on their sundae. I guess the argument is, should you have nuts out for all the kids to pick from, right? If we want to carry that metaphor to its extreme.
We live in a country, fortunately, that we have the freedom to choose. And that also means that we have to take responsibility for our choices, both as adults and then also being parents. We have to be responsible for the actions and choices that our children make. And so I definitely don't want to give up any of our freedoms. The majority of Americans don't. A recent poll last fall before the election showed that the majority of Americans do not believe in censoring materials at libraries. It's not a left or right issue. This is just a fundamental First Amendment issue. And so even though the people tried to divide us, this issue is not a divisive topic. The majority of Americans believe in having that freedom to choose.
And I can back that up. There was an American Library Association survey last year. I'm not sure if this is the same one you're referring to. And I did ask the representative a little about this. I didn't share the results with him, but 72% of parents basically said, it's fine if a parent wants to set rules for their kids, but they should not get to decide what other kids can and cannot see. So that was a strong majority position in that survey, again, from the American Library Association. Fallon Kirby, teaching and teachers also came up a lot in that part of the conversation. We heard the representative talk about the quote-unquote woke ideology of teachers. I wondered if you wanted to respond to that or anything else you've been hearing.
Yes, I did. The woke comment, the state representative also did say that he's in fear of losing those core family values. But, you know, compassion and kindness and empathy, we're using literature to teach those concepts to children. And you get in a scary place where certain people are deciding what we can and or what students can and can't have access to. Librarians and educators and teachers, we're not being trusted to do our job. It's someone from the outside saying, hey, you should do this. But if you, I completely believe that you should have, as a parent, a right to choose what your child is reading. But because you don't agree with the perspective that is being put out, you're going to stop all kids to read it. I feel like that is that is your parental right, but you shouldn't make those choices for all students. He said that we need to get back to critical thinking and reading and writing. And to me, that's ironic that you are advocating for that, but you're going to take away books. It doesn't make much sense to me.
John, so with this new law on the books, there are still going to be conservative people on library and school boards around the state. There are still going to be people in communities who object to books and events at libraries. What do you expect will and won't change, particularly looking through the lens of the work your organization does?
So the opportunity to petition your government for a redress of grievances, that's really the core of any request to remove a book, to challenge materials. And that's one of the five freedoms within the First Amendment. You know, the other one being freedom of speech, which leads to freedom to read. These conflicts within the First Amendment they go back to the founding of the Republic. They're difficult to resolve. The tensions between my rights to read, your rights to petition, the way that this law comes down is on the side of reading. It's on the side of access. It comes down on the side that we should be providing a low barrier for people. Censorship is one of the biggest civil liberties overreach that I've ever seen. It's interesting to me that it's often talked about in very progressive ways, you know, that book bans are about, you know, we should oppose book bans because of wanting to make sure that people's identities are put in place. The restrictions on book bans are actually a bolstering of civil liberties in the most libertarian, traditionally conservative way possible. The overreach that happens, according to the Washington Post, there was a wonderful article written by Natasha Bergeson back in April, where she went through and reviewed book bans, challenges, all the different requests around the country in 2022. And she discovered that 11 people, just 11 people, you know, around the country were responsible for something like 67% of all the book banning requests. You know, that's not a reasonable situation. When one person's proclivities to remove materials based on this inappropriate versus appropriate dichotomy drive local policy decisions. Brian, I hope that this new law in Illinois provides some good frameworks for library boards to consider that if the sincerely held beliefs of the person who is challenging the book, I want that respected all the way through. But if it's this vexatious kind of approach where they come in and they attempt to ban things for the sake of banning them or to drive a particular political agenda to the exclusion of anyone's rights, I hope that this gives library boards some new opportunities to say no. We'd like to stand on the side of inclusion, reading, and access.
Ashley, back in March, when this legislation was being debated in the Illinois House, there was another Republican state representative, C.D. Davids-Meyer of Jacksonville, who said he was skeptical about librarians, frankly. And I'm reading from how he was quoted in a Tribune article. He said, "I'm not sure what library science teaches an individual to allow them to decide the mental maturity of a child. I don't think that a librarian is the end-all, be-all decision maker in the state of Illinois on what books should be given to a child." So, Ashley, what does library science teach you about working with children? How do you decide what books get shelved where, what's appropriate for whom?
Great question. So I did not go through library school, but what I can tell you just from running a library is that there are so many protocols to meet. Even starting at the publishing company, there's certain, you know, requirements and expectations before a book is even published with a publishing company, before it even gets to the library. And then once we do get there, we have people that are trained and deciding what it has to meet. I think the thing that we just fall back to is it has to meet certain quality expectations to even get into the library's collection. And it goes through multiple different channels of review before it ends up on the library shelf. So a lot of the books that have been, I don't want to say trending, but they've been going around on the internet are either self-published books that would probably never actually end up in a library, or they are fearful because they don't want young kids getting a hold of it, but the book is actually in a young adult or adult section. So I encourage people to just actually walk through the library, and even just with programming, not just with the materials on our shelves. I tell people, come to the Drag Queen Story Time, experience it for yourself, read the material yourself, and then we can have a discussion about it. But yes, I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yeah, that does. That does. And Fallon, I want to ask you as well about the role of books and come back to this book, Ghost Boys, and why it's important for students to read books like that about diverse experiences, both students of color and students who are not of color, right? Talk about the importance of that.
So the importance for me, I feel, is to teach perspective. Like, you don't have to agree with everything that's said in this book. You don't have to put it a part of your daily life, but books are a way to provide understanding for kids with these hard to deal with concepts, especially with concepts of race. These are libraries and schools. They're supposed to be a place for students to get access to information. And I'm supposed to guide them through that information. So it's so important for students. The district that I taught in, East Peoria, is less than 2% school population of students of color. So to me, it felt important as a Black educator to, you know, students see it on the news. You know, they saw that what was happening with George Floyd and with issues of police brutality. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a safe space in our classroom to learn about these concepts? And then if you don't want your child to be privy to this information, then there's nothing wrong with that. That's something that provides, understanding for both teacher and student. So that's okay for you to remove your student, but for this access to this information, for this beautiful story that shows both perspectives of what it's like to be a victim of police brutality, it was so important for me to give that information and for my cooperating teachers to give that information to our students. And we were stopped in such a backdoor type of way, which made it seem to students that, you know, maybe we were doing something wrong. I had to figure out that struggle within myself as a Black educator. Am I doing something wrong for providing this perspective to children? And the answer, obviously, is no.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for our program today in this important topic. I want to thank our guests, John Kraska, Ashley Stewart, and Fallon Kirby. If you are going to be, again, in the Peoria area and you want to hear more on this, there will be a panel discussion 6 p.m. Wednesday at the North Branch of the Peoria Public Library. Again, John, Ashley, and Fallon, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
It was a pleasure there, Brian.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And thank you also to State Representative Adam Niemerk for sharing his views and to all of you for listening today. We love hearing what you think about what we have been talking about, whether it's on today's program or any topic from our recent shows. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, if you think we got something wrong or for whatever reason, you can let us know anytime by emailing talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org, or you can call our voicemail line. 217-300-2121 is the number there. 217-300-2121. We will be sharing some of your responses on air from time to time. You can find that number, our email address, every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find a link to our past programs and a subscription link for our podcasts, or just look us up on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Search for The 21st Show. Coming up later this week, we're going to be having conversations on retiring medical debt. There's a program in Bloomington that is helping people with that. We'll also be talking about hazing in college. Related to the scandal that happened, was coming to light, I should say, in the past few weeks at Northwestern University. Plus, the Illinois Supreme Court is expected to finally rule on the Pretrial Fairness Act, the end of cash bond in Illinois. We've had a number of conversations on that. We are aiming to bring you a conversation sort of following up on what the Supreme Court rules on that later this week. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Nick Boyven. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.